Hello, I'm Rob Hirschfeld, CEO and co-founder of Rakuten and your host for the Cloud 2030 podcast. In this episode, we discuss the SSH intrusion attack that was introduced April 2nd, so was introduced into the Linux kernel. We dissect what the attack is, how it happened, what the social engineering was, and the pressure that evolved to make that happen. It's about a 17-minute discussion. This was our intro for our technical talk, but it was such an important concept to capture that I wanted to set it up as a dedicated special Cloud 2030 topic. I hope you enjoy the discussion.
Elephant in the room is the XV or issue with the library.
I am not following that. The XV?
Sorry. The compression library used by some, or that was included in some Linux packages. And in Debian, it was also tied in into SSH, and turns out that one of the XC maintainers introduced a backdoor for SSH.
Consensus so far was that it was a really epic case of social engineering over a multi-year period to get maintainer access. By social engineering the burned out maintainer of XC, and then leveraging that to inject some really cleverly hidden backdoors that took advantage of some kind of system-wide pre-link optimization steps. It was there's been a lot of stuff on Hacker News about it, and it's basically the first widely distributed supply chain attack on an open source project.
With a CVSS score of 10. So that's the worst possible score.
Yep.
So he would pseudo maintainer, I guess, or hostile maintainer was able to inject actual, like take over vulnerabilities.
Yeah. Basically, he arranged things so that backdoored libLZMA so that it could take advantage of a piece of functionality called iFunc, which allows you to substitute functions for platform-specific optimized versions of them really early in link time. He utilized a combination of that, systemd pulling in libLZMA for compressed log handling, and a common distro setup where they would patch OpenSSH to pull in libsystemd so that it could have a daemon notification and chain that all together to hijack part of the key handshake to detect when someone was trying to log in with a private certificate that had an exploit payload into it. And if they did that, then SSH would just exec the payload directly. It was an incredibly sophisticated attack that was only foiled because he introduced a 0.5-second delay in startup, and someone was wondering, why that happened while troubleshooting something unrelated in Postgres.
And this was a trusted account, too. There was a co-maintainer, one of two maintainers.
Yeah.
Like long form, like multiple years he's been around.
He engineered himself into becoming one.
So he identified a vulnerability and then identified a social engineering approach to be able to explore it?
Wholesale.
So this was not a vulnerability. This was a backdoor built into the library that would be triggered when used under certain conditions by the SSH team.
Right. But that person had to identify...
No, he didn't identify anything. He created it.
He did. But that sounds like he identified a place where he could inject this weakness and then set out to find the find, you know, because it not only had to be a vulnerability that he could add this backdoor payload into, but it also had to be on a library that where he could social engineer his way in, right? It was
This was a maintainer who the original maintainer takes frequent breaks from the internet because he has a lot of mental health issues that he's trying to work through and whatnot. And as part of that, there's constant pressure from customers in the community says, hey, we've got all these things that need to be maintained. You're taking too long. What are you going to do about it? They actually are following some of this and they believe it's actually the guy or the people, the actors creating that pressure, which then allowed him to become a co-maintainer. Basically said, hey, I understand your problem. How about I come in and help because the community still needs this? I don't know how they all came to agree to that, but basically he worked his way in.
Well, this wasn't a single person doing this. Like this has all of the hallmarks of being state actors.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the consensus at this point is that he was targeted by some state agency or other.
Incredible story. Absolutely incredible story. Well, and also it shows you just how much of the infrastructure we rely on, back to that XKCD cartoon, of how much of the infrastructure we rely on has down to, you know, us one, two, or, you know, three maintainers for those libraries, especially for old and stable, you know, for long-term stable libraries that don't need, you know, necessarily a ton of bandwidth, but they do need a ton of architecture and expertise.
And also goes to show how much trust is placed, not just in the package maintainers, but in the source code maintainers. Because both Debian, was it testing or unstable? I think unstable was the one that was affected, Sid. And the latest Fedora, they were just blindly pulling the source code and not really doing much verification there.
Well, they were verifying the source code. The problem is the piece that was there was a binary blob that was for testing. And what the guy had done or the actors had done was very subtly make some small changes days before that basically disabled the check to make sure that it was a valid file. So they just pulled the file down and added that in and as part of the build process instead of trying to rebuild everything from scratch. It just pulled down the binary and as part of their build process, injected it into the code. So whether or not they verified the code itself, they did not know it was in the binary and had trust that it was okay.
Yeah, and it was a very solid change. The sensor just added one dot that made the file invalid.
And that's the key. You have to know that it invalidates that file.
Yeah.
It was a very sophisticated attack.
Sounds like it. How long was it in place before it was detected?
3 days.
That's incredible that it was caught that fast.
Pure luck. Mm-hmm. Even the person who found it was like totally...
It hadn't introduced half a second delay in starting in SSH, initializing whatever it was opening a new connection, no one would have found it.
Not for a while, no. But I was actually talking to the person who found it on Mastodon. The other insidious thing about this is that it had a lot of sophisticated evasion techniques. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if it detected a term or a shell or a debugger, it would not execute the vulnerable code path. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, it was only baked into the library if it was being built as part of a deb or an RPM package. If you were running the test suite, it would deliberately disable some checks that are designed to catch these sorts of bugs or vulnerabilities, rather.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It was very sophisticated and, you know, put together over the course of a couple of years, including social engineering the maintainer to accept that to begin with.
Yeah. But on the flip side, this would not have been able to evade eBPF based detection techniques, because that's done directly in the kernel.
Or fuzzing. That was one of the things they did, was specifically that attack disabled fuzzing test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a lot of chat in the community about this. Also about, the value of bill of materials of like how far back you need to go to verify trust. It's
yeah, I've seen a lot of citations on the good old Reflections on Trusting Trust paper.
Yeah. Like, my takeaway on this is, like, a lot of people have been saying, like, well, like, software bill of materials would not have caught this, and why would you even use software bill of materials if this hasn't caught? My sense is that the opposite, that, like, the goal of the bill of materials was not to catch this, is that now that you know it exists, it lets you be so much more agile at determining which of your environments are affected.
Right. And software bill of materials is as much about remediation as it is about reduction of harm.
Exactly. But yeah, we're going to see a lot of academic papers coming out of this.
It's fascinating. But is this mostly Debian? How many distros did it touch?
Fedora, at least.
The vulnerable ones were Fedora. I think Tuesday at Tumbleweed was also affected, and Debian Unstable was affected.
Yeah. It targeted the Glipsy, so any musel-based distro like Alpine was not affected. Funnily enough, NixOS, it did have the vulnerable source code, but because Nix uses different paths, the backdoor code would have never been executed.
And was also the injection only happened if you were building for a dev or an RPM. I don't think it targeted any other package management solutions.
Interesting. If you weren't using SSH, you wouldn't be vulnerable, right? This was wrote on the SSH interface.
The backdoor was specifically for SSH, yes. But I mean, do you really trust the library after this?
No, it's one of those things that to me is a little bit funny, in that I'm just thinking about like Ansible versus other management tools. And one of the things, the agentless aspect of SSH that everybody talks about, where it's really just running SSH as an agent, but versus an agent, that's actually specific to the platform. And so it's one of those things where that's riding on a general purpose configuration port in a way.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. And then last question before I turn us to the topic. Is this something that I heard also required you to use a custom certificate for this? Or how did they inject the payload in the certificates?
Put anything in a certificate.
Sure. But I mean, if I'm generating my own certificates, I'm assuming I have some degree of trust on that.
It would only accept the payload from a specific certificate.
So it would be a client certificate, not a server certificate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you would present a specifically crafted client certificate that would authenticate against a public key that I believe was embedded as part of the exploit payload. As part of the payload, and if that was present, then SSH would execute whatever the certificate told it to execute.
So this wasn't carrying on your logins. What it was doing was basically making SSH, somebody could present a certificate that would then bypass all the authentication and process because of the payload in the certificate.
Yep.
And I just realized why that's a 10. Holy mackerel. Yeah, so you're basically knocking on the door and the pattern invokes the back and on the front door, and that invokes the back door.
Wow. I had almost installed Fedora 40 the day before all that happened. Thankfully I did not. I made it obvious choice work stability is very, very important. So
yeah, another benefit to not having your servers on the internet. Because even if nobody can get there, you're still protected.
And it would have been easy to exploit because SSH servers connected to the public internet have to fend off, port knocking and just, and random SSH attacks all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't even notice necessarily because there's the flood of the knocks anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, it's fantastic to have these weekly sessions where when news of the day occurs, we can come back and zero in on exactly what's going on, what the vulnerability is, how it happened. Really powerful to be part of a community that's able to cover this type of material. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you want to be part of these dialogues, join us at 2030.cloud. We post our schedule. You can come in. We always spend a couple minutes. They don't always make it in the recordings like today, but we always spend a couple minutes talking about what's going on in tech and bring each other up to speed. I hope to see you there. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Cloud 2030 podcast. It is sponsored by RackN, where we are really working to build a community of people who are using and thinking about infrastructure differently, because that's what RackN does. We write software that helps put operators back in control of distributed infrastructure, really thinking about how things should be run and building software that makes that possible. If this is interesting to you, please try out the software. We would love to get your opinion and hear how you think this could transform infrastructure more broadly, or just keep enjoying the podcast and coming to the discussions and laying out your thoughts and how you see the future unfolding. All part of building a better infrastructure operations community. Thank you.